Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Cam Fargelon.
Justrie DM.
And we're joined today by our very special non-French guest.
Monsieur Omicron Rector.
Oh.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Coming in strong. Coming in strong.
Oh, no.
Like Omicron. Infecting your ears.
Please let that not catch on as a thing. I need that to not catch on as a thing. All right. Yes, we are here to talk Christmas movies. Tis the season. We're going to be doing Christmas horror for the next 3 weeks.
Joyeux Noël.
Presumably take the fourth week of the year, fourth week of the month off for the holidays. But right now, we're going to be talking Christmas nonstop, except when we stop to do random crap, which is what we're going to do first. Okay, so first off, I just want to recommend a video game to everyone, as I always do. This one is called The Last Stand Aftermath. The Last Stand was a video game that was a base defense game where you like had a wall and there were zombies on the other side of the wall. And then you would just shoot the zombies, and then every night you would, like, look for more troops to help you defend, or look for stuff to build traps or ammo or blah, 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 blah. It's a cute game. Really enjoyed it. Well, the developers went all out with their sequel and made a full-on roguelike, where you play a guy who's infected with a zombie plague, so you have a couple of days before you die, and so you're sent out to find as many supplies as you can from the surrounding areas. So you just play as a series of survivors trying to do this. You search areas, you kill zombies, you hunt for supplies. There's a whole meta plot going on around it that's very interesting, and the gameplay is absolutely stellar. So if you like zombie games, if you like roguelites, absolutely check out this one. It's fantastic. The Last Stand, Aftermath.
Wow.
All right.
I've been hunkering for a new zombie game. I just don't feel like there's enough populating the market now. So.
Very, very helpful information.
Yes, yes.
Next up, I believe somebody watched a TV show.
I have watched part of a TV show. I'm not finished, but I started watching Arcane, that League of Legends show on Netflix.
How is it?
I am enjoying it. I don't know the first thing about League. I don't play it. I don't follow anything about it. The only thing I do know is that song by that Korean girl group.
That is about League of Legends, I assume?
I don't even know. But I am enjoying the show. I think it's pretty good. I think it's an interesting story, good characters, good animation.
Okay. Is that the one with Haley? Is Haley Steinfeld? She's the voice?
Yes.
Yeah. Right? Okay. I was wondering, I was just making sure I got the right one. Okay.
Mm. Yep. Continuing Hollywood's war on voice actors.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
But I'm enjoying her in Hawkeye, so there you go.
I like her. Yeah. Huh. And she was the best part of Bumblebee, too.
She was. Except for Bumblebee.
I'm kidding.
She was very good in that. Except for
John Cena? Jeez.
No, he was wonderful in that. But, you know, it's not like he's the star. She's the star of the movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, be sure to let us know how the show turns out and, like, if it's worth watching the whole season. But you love it so far.
Yes.
Okay, that's great. All right, next up.
Yeah, I'll keep on the video game tip. I saw the most recent Resident Evil, the prequel, Welcome to Raccoon City.
It's not actually a prequel. It's just a completely new...
But it's an origin story because it takes place in 1988. So it's kind of the birth of the Umbrella Corporation and all that. So,
okay, interesting.
So technically it is. I mean, it's origin story, whatever you want to call it. So,
yeah.
But this one... Mia Jovovich is no longer part of the franchise, and thankfully no longer is Paul W.S. Anderson. that said, she was replaced by Kaya, Scoldenario, the girl from Crawl.
Crawl.
Yeah, exactly. And she's equally good in this. Unfortunately, the film, for all of its Easter egg goodies and shout outs to the original game, the original Resident Evil game. It's surprisingly dull. And it's not that much, there's not much to distinguish it from all the countless inferior sequels that have populated the screen over the years. The style and the tone changes just dramatically from the beginning, like the intro of the film, to when it actually gets going. And the CGI is, I mean, it could have been filmed in 1998 for the, the CGI in there. It's really, really bad. You know, there's some clunky exposition and just, you know, there's nothing natural about the dialogue. That said, for those who remember playing the original Resident Evil game, you're certainly going to have a lot of member berries, a lot of times where you'll get little shout outs and Easter eggs to the original game. So for, you know, I guess for completists, it's worth it to see it for that. But other than that, there's just not much there.
I will have to check it out because you know me in Resident Evil. But it's kind of weird that, like, Resident Evil came out in 1996. Mm-hmm. And it was set in 1998. So it was set in the near future. And Resident Evil 2, which the movie is based on, it's based on Resident Evil 2 with her playing Claire Redfield and some guy playing Leon. And what's interesting to me is it's just so weird that to go back and, like, start over, you're now making a period piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so true. Weird that they didn't attempt to modernize it. Like, it's went from being set in the future to being a period piece, and they didn't attempt to modernize it. I was expecting them to do, okay, it's Resident Evil 2, but we're going to set it in the present day. But no, they're setting it in 98, so nobody has a well, no, people had cell phones. But the cell phones sucked.
And there's few, once it gets going, you know, it could have taken place this year, last year, whatever. You know, it's not that heavily dependent on era.
All we're going to ask is Mr. X in the movie?
Oh, do you want me to even say that? Because that's going to...
No, don't
okay,
say
don't
it.
Say it. All right, don't say it. I'll watch it, and then I'll talk about it on the show after I've seen it.
So. Okay, all right.
Because I'm a big Resident Evil nerd, so... yeah, this was supposedly their attempt to, like, adapt all of the games in, like, a series, and
they
this
do.
One has not had a great response, so I don't know if they're going to keep that going. This seems to be, like, from the ashes of their attempt to do a terrible Resident Evil TV show that seems to have disappeared.
Yes.
So it's like, I guess the only thing they got that's popular is that wonderful series of animated movies. Because we really liked Resident Evil... well, Infinite Darkness was the new one.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think I've seen the majority of the films. I have not seen the TV show. I mean, and
the animated movies.
I haven't seen the animated ones, no.
The animated movies are part of the, like, the movies have nothing to do with the video games, like, whatsoever. And the animated films are, like, in continuity, canon continuations, and side stories about the video games.
And
it's all very convoluted.
And it's 2D though, right? I mean, it's not.
It's 3D animated. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a whole series of animated movies that Capcom made. Yeah. Okay. They started back in like 2006 or something with Degeneration, and then they've just been going strong since then. With just what Leon's been up to since Resident Evil 4 has been basically entirely covered in the movies rather than the video games.
I think they should probably stick to doing that then, because it seems like that's what they're doing best.
This is just not strong. Okay, there you go. Yeah. All right, I'll check it out. But all right, here we go. I've got quiz for everybody, and I think you're going to do okay this time.
Don't say that.
You say that every time, and then we end up tanking it.
Okay. Well, okay. How about this? The brain of the monster in Frankenstein is obtained from which of the following places? Graveyard, university, prison, or morgue?
Graveyard.
No.
Graveyard.
Okay, I was wrong. It's a university.
A university graveyard.
Well,
graveyard university.
Graveyard university.
Okay, in Videodrome, he works for Civic TV. What city is the film set in?
Toronto.
Yep. Yeah, obviously.
I was going to say Canada somewhere, but
It's Rob
the
might not
city
know
of
this, but
Canada.
It's based on City TV, a real life TV station.
Okay.
That made its name by showing pornography after midnight. Because Canadian laws allowed them to do that, and that's why, you know, he's such a sleazy creep.
Every
in the
TV station in Canada showed porn after midnight.
Well, no, but City TV was...
City TV.
Well, no, but every independent one. Like, the network affiliates weren't allowed to, and so City TV made its bones by doing that. What Academy...
We all remember it.
Yeah. What Academy Award-winning director was the credited writer on 10 Cloverfield Lane?
On 10?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Steve Spielberg?
Academy Award win. Wait, are you saying that Steven Spielberg wrote 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Maybe he did.
Oh, God. I mean, J.J. Abrams was...
Never won an Oscar, though.
Never won an Oscar, yeah.
Yeah. This is a tough one. I had no idea about this one.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to hazard a guess, so
okay.
Just tell us.
It's Damien Chazelle from Whiplash. Yeah, apparently
oh, yeah,
he wrote
course.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, in Sinister, what do people call the pagan god Bagul?
Azul.
No.
Yeah, like that. Bagul is his name, but all of the kids call him.
Oh.
You don't remember?
Clearly, I don't.
No.
They call him Mr. Boogie.
Mothman.
Because he's the real life boogeyman. Or Mothman, it says in the card. Or
if
Mothman.
It's
yeah.
West
so there you go.
Virginia, okay. It's Mothman.
Let me rewind 3 minutes earlier to count saying, I think you guys are going to do really well at this.
Okay, well, I thought people remembered Sinister as much as I did.
All right.
Which actor from Magnificent Seven played the henchman of the principal character played by Vincent Price in House of Wax?
Oh, for fuck's sake, I don't know.
Go back. Okay, are we talking about the
One of the original Magnificent Seven, one of the seven guys, played the henchman in House of Wax. Interestingly, under his real name. That's a huge hint.
Steve McQueen?
Yeah.
It's only a hint if you know the answer.
No, like, how many people in The Magnificent had a fake stage name? Magnificent
how
Seven
many
had a fake
people
stage
remember
name?
Every single person
I'm just trying to remember all the
characters.
Yeah,
I mean, I
Brenner,
can go.
Steve
I think
McQueen,
I can do it. Yeah.
Eli Wallach.
Yeah.
The
only one people don't remember
Bronson?
Is the...
Bronson?
It is Charles Bronson, yes.
Borkowski.
Charles Bukowski. And you even remember... It's Buczynski, but yes. He even remembered his real name. So there you go.
Yeah. All right, do I get extra points for that, then?
You get 2 points for that. No, you get 2.5 points for that.
All right.
But yeah, no one remembers, like, the seventh member of the Magnificent Seven, the guy who wasn't an actor. The guy who plays the kid in the Magnificent Seven who just wasn't an actor and was put in the movie because, and this is an insane story, Frank Sinatra almost drowned in Hawaii, and a lifeguard dragged him out of the ocean. And he's like, thanks, kid. You want to be in movies? And that
really?
Is how that guy ended up in The Magnificent Seven.
And that was Bronson?
No, not Bronson. That was the kid.
That was the kid who...
Yeah, the kid. The
so
one who never
one
did anything
seven.
Else. You know, he's the seventh member. He's the guy who desperately wants to get in the group.
Right.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. What 1964 Japanese film is based on a Shin Buddhist parable? All right, well, I'm not even going to pretend you can get this. Okay, you're right. That was a bad card. I take it back. That was a terrible card.
Jesus Christ.
The movie Oni Baba. So I've never
I did see that film, but I
oh,
just...
Oh, you did? You never would have gotten it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, bad card. Mine bad.
Okay.
Let's move on to...
Please.
A list, I guess?
Yes, it is a list. Yeah. I thought you were going to jump in, but I should have cued you better.
So, this week's list is the 10 scariest killer Santa Clauses in horror movies.
Ooh.
Ranked.
Ranked! Yes, finally!
Yeah. So we are counting down from 10.
Okay.
I think. Yes.
No, that's what ranked means, 100%.
Oh, yeah, because they give it a score. They say 10 out of 10, 9 out of 10.
Oh.
And then we got 1 out of 10. So is 1 out of 10 the best or the worst? Because 1 out of 10 is a terrible score.
It's the best, but they're just bad at expressing that fact.
Friggin' Screen Rant, get your shit together. Learn how numbers work.
Okay.
Okay. 10 out of 10.
All right. I know.
Ricky from Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
I don't understand why you wouldn't put, like, he spends 1 second of the movie in a, like, doesn't even spend 1 second of the movie in a Santa costume?
Yeah.
Like,
he is in the costume.
Only right at the end of the movie.
Of
no, but he only puts the costume on to kill the nun at the end of the movie. The rest of the movie, he's just running around murdering people as himself.
Also, the rest of the movie is just the first movie.
Well, so yes, the first movie recycled, exactly.
That's true. Like, 60% of that movie is just the first movie recycled. But it's like, I don't understand why you would put him on this list when he's basically not a killer Santa. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. All right, next up.
Okay, 9 out of 10. To All a Good Night.
Which one is that?
This.
It says here, it's David Hess. It's a festive and ferocious killer Santa Claus flick in which the boyfriends of an all-girls school are stalked and slashed one by one. I love
David Hess.
Me too, but I don't think I've seen this.
I've seen this.
No.
All right, maybe something to add to the list next week. Yeah.
Right?
Do they have it here?
1980.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we're totally going to check this out.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. 8 out of 10. Game Over.
What?
I think this is that French, like, Père Noël bunch of numbers that I don't remember.
Right.
Oh, right. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yes, that opens with the Minitel terminal, and then it becomes Home Alone briefly. Okay, yeah.
So, but the thing, I think, I don't remember this. This, okay, it says here that the Santa Claus is the boy's grandfather.
Was he?
The boy's protecting his grandfather from Santa Claus.
Yeah. Like, I think they misunderstood that movie. Or just misremembered it.
I think they misremembered it because I'm 100% sure that the evil Santa Claus is not the kid's grandfather because he hides his grandfather from the killer Santa.
Part of the movie.
And then, and then it's really, really sad and I don't want to talk about why.
Yeah, no. It's a downer of a movie.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, okay. So they just remembered it wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
It better be Christmas evil in here.
7 out of 10. St. Nicholas from Sint.
We liked Sint.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
That's a good movie. That's a good movie. Good. Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Okay.
Okay, number 6 out of 10. Santa Claus from Rare Exports.
Rare Exports is pretty good.
That was good.
Yeah,
I had a really good time with Rare Exports.
Yep. All right.
Come on. We are patiently waiting for Christmas Evil.
I know.
Okay. 5 out of 10. Harry from Christmas Evil.
Yes! Oh, I love that movie so much.
So do I.
I love that. I think one of my favorite parts about it is that when you go to the credits, you find out that, like, different segments of the movie were shot at vastly different times with different crews, and it was just awkwardly cobbled together. And that's why, like, the cops never interact with anyone. Because they're like, we got to get this up to feature length. Let's do a bunch of scenes with cops. There, done.
The whole film just oozes that, like, I know it was released in 1980, but it has that, like, 70s grindhouse sleaze all over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just, makes you feel dirty watching it, but in a way that you end up enjoying.
Yes, of course.
And it has the best ending of any movie, we all know. No one has ever ended a movie better than Christmas Evil ends. And for once, I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't seen Christmas Evil.
Wow.
I know, it's not like, it's very off-brand for me to not just spoil everything all the time. But yeah, this time I won't. All right, next up.
Okay, number 4 out of 10. Ooh. Santa from Santa's Sleigh, which is a terrible movie, but I enjoy it.
Bill Goldberg,
yeah,
right?
Bill Goldberg is Santa.
Yeah.
If you want, like, the definition of a guilty pleasure, it's Santa's Sleigh. It's not a good movie at all. Fun ride.
He's good in it.
It's just so weird because, like, the big showdown to the end is curling. What does that?
It's so strange. I genuinely have a good time watching this movie, but I don't think it's a good movie.
Okay, number 3 out of 10 is Santa Claus from Silent Night.
Wait, is that the remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night that Donald Logue was in?
The one from 2012?
Yeah, that wasn't good at all.
Oh.
Santa has, like, barely any screen time. He's just a generic killer. He doesn't look that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, why would you put him that high on the list?
I think the list is backwards, and maybe they were just running out of evil Santas.
Oh, okay. That actually does make... Yeah, like, okay. That just seems like such a weird thing to include. But then again, if we've already had two Silent Nights on here, the number one is probably Silent Night, Deadly Night. Billy from that, so I guess we'll see, right?
Unless they're including Sinterklaas from Krampus, considering him as a Santa variation.
Anyway, we'll find out.
All right, go ahead.
All right, go.
Okay, number 2 out of 10 is Billy.
Ah, there we go.
Silent Night, Deadly.
No, they really think they're getting better as they go lower. Yeah, Billy's magnificent. Like,
yep.
He says dirty all the time. He snarls.
His eyebrows do so much acting.
He picks up a naked woman, or a topless woman, and he impales her on antlers. Come on. He cuts off the head of a jerk tobogganing at the bottom of a ski hill. It's a delightful movie.
Agreed.
All right.
All right. You ready for number 1?
Obviously.
Santa Claus from Tales from the Crypt.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Larry Drake Santa. I thought this was just from movies, though. Oh, do they mean the 70s?
They mean 1972.
Oh, they mean the 70s one. Wow.
Okay.
I preferred the Tales from the Crypt TV show version, but that one was really good, too. Yeah, that one was... That's a creepy segment.
Nice.
Yeah. No, that is...
List.
Yeah, bad list. Top 2 were dead on.
Yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't a bad list. I mean, it had its faults, but I mean, yeah. It at least got the... I can't think of any that they've left out that I would... Yeah. Wholeheartedly.
You're right. The essentials are the essentials are all there. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but solid, and always good to see Christmas Evil getting a shout out.
Definitely. Bring it.
People just love that Christmas Evil. What can I say? All right. I gotta say, Killer Santas, like, it's such a wonderful reversal, but I have to ask, is that something that people are gonna keep doing, making Christmas horror movies about Killer Santas?
I hope so, but I can't say for sure because this week's upcoming horror movie is Werewolf Castle.
What? Yes, please. When can I watch this movie?
That's why I picked it. All right,
not Castlevania.
Synopsize for you.
Please.
After a series of local killings and disappearances, Horace, Jane, and half-werewolf Archie are tasked by the troubled local villagers to investigate strange happenings in a nearby Gothic castle. Not Romanesque, Gothic. Venturing to the castle for the night with a small group of brave volunteers, they soon uncover a horde of otherworldly creatures, and a battle soon breaks out.
I am so profoundly here for this.
It sounds so utterly British. Is it British?
It has to be, right?
From Dark Temple Motion Pictures. I don't recognize any of the names associated with this. And yeah, it must be because it's written and directed by a guy who made a movie called An English Haunting and another movie called A Werewolf in England.
Oh,
yeah, 100%. This is a British movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of, have they made any more movies about those people who kept showing up in a field and then arguing about whether or not they had heard a ghost or not?
What?
Don't you remember how we watched that movie about, like, the guys
what
who...
What are you talking about?
We watched a movie about, like, a group of people wanting to make a documentary about a guy who claims he can talk to ghosts.
Oh,
like a medium.
Shit, those are awful.
And then we watched the second one, and it was set the next day, and nothing continued to happen, but they made a whole second movie where nothing happened. They're like, well, we'll come back tomorrow, and then something will really happen next time.
So it's essentially just like...
Of that second movie, something did happen.
Yes.
I think they opened up a portal to another dimension or some shit.
Something.
This is essentially like every Bigfoot series ever.
Pretty much,
kind of, yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm just like thinking about people who only make horror movie, low budget horror movies in England, and that is always the first thing that comes to mind.
So Werewolf Castle will be released on January 31st, 2022.
All right. Well, we're covering Werewolf Castle 100%.
You should do a double one with a werewolf in England as well, too.
Ooh, if it's available, yeah. All right. So we did actually watch movies this week, if you can call them that.
That's mean.
It is mean. And it's meaner than one of these movies deserves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We did not discuss which one we wanted to talk about
well,
first.
Then I will defer to you on this one, then.
Okay, well, we'll go with the one I wrote down first.
Always a good choice.
Which is Stuffings. Two YouTubers spend the Christmas holidays camping in the hills outside Adelaide and getting chased by either the townsfolk or Monster Santa, or both.
I did genuinely laugh once in this movie, so I'll say that. it did genuinely make me laugh once. So it was not a complete waste of my time.
Intentionally? Okay.
No, it was a good joke. It was the joke. Damn it! Picks up phone. How to drive manual?
Yeah,
that's a funny joke. That was funny.
It was cute.
Yeah, it was a funny joke, and it pays off something from earlier in the movie. So that scene alone suggests that they do understand the concept of how to do a satisfying setup and payoff. They just didn't do that for the rest of the movie.
What is a stuffins?
I don't know.
Well, this is the problem with it. So, okay, I will say this for the movie. I did like that they had created this whole mythology around Christmas and what this weird little town has to do every year for Christmas. It's just unfortunate that we never really get to fully understand it.
Yeah.
And there's a point in the movie where the YouTubers know what's up, but no one has explained it to them. So how could they possibly know?
That's what I was going to ask you guys. Like, did I fall asleep and miss 5 minutes of this movie?
I'm glad.
Like, I was worried that I had watched the wrong version of this or something. Because suddenly they know the plot and I don't.
When he comes to this conclusion, I mean, the lead YouTuber guy should have like this, should be flooded with guilt because of his like little hissy fit and tearing apart one of those stuffing scarecrows.
Yeah.
It led to the killing of town folk. Like, he took someone's private property and then tore it open and kicked it for whatever reason, because he was pissed at seeing them, I guess. And because of that, Stuffins or whoever else killed the family or killed whoever's inside that house. I was like, you're directly responsible for their deaths. You realize that, don't you, dude?
Well, that's true. He's directly responsible. But at the same time, they did have to kill a man and an old person and a child and a woman for their thing. And then that just became the man.
But not the house that he was in. Not the house.
Doesn't that count as the guy that they killed for the ritual? Because they don't kill another. Because later he says, "We've already killed a man and an old person for the ritual this week, so I don't have to kill you now. So you just stay tied up here."
But it was one of the random people who was waiting in the beginning for the whatever that lottery was.
Lottery. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the lottery was picking who's going to get executed this year, because it was a version of the lottery. Yeah.
No, I thought the lottery was picking who had to provide.
Yeah,
the victims for execution.
You're right. I should have said that, not who's going to die. You're right. It was who had to participate. You're right.
Yeah.
But that ended up being the victim. It was one of the townspeople, but he was one of the victims for the thing. Like, somebody was going to get killed for the thing, and it just wound up being that guy. And you're right that the YouTuber causes it to happen, but the town was going to kill somebody. And it just happened that it was a guy who was kind of complicit in all the murders.
Okay. Well. Yeah. Regardless, maybe I lost it because
it's easy to lose the thread with this plot.
Wow.
So,
you can't be blamed for that.
I'll try to explain this real quick and then we can talk about exactly how it works.
Okay.
So this town, I don't know if the town itself is cursed or there's just a curse out there from 40 years ago, whereby the townsfolk have to prevent, I guess, an evil Santa from killing everybody in Adelaide who puts
all
up
of
a Christmas
the children
tree,
of Adelaide.
By sacrificing 4 people to the evil Santa Claus.
Every year.
They also put out fake Santa Clauses
to ward him off.
I don't know, to protect, as like a warding against him, or
yes, I think
just cause. Because
I think it was a warding
around.
Because there were some that were just like in the middle of a field, like there were
There's one in a drain pipe. It's like, and all of the stuffings, or I don't know, the Santa Claus scarecrows they put out, get up and walk around.
Yeah, and at that point, I'm
like murderous, but all of them are animate. So I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, well, my question was, when they started to get up and walking around, I'm like, are these the previous year's victims that they turn into them? But then I remember one at the start is just a stuffed scarecrow, so it couldn't have been. Well, no, but I was trying to figure out what was going on, and the film doesn't help you with that a lot.
Yeah, because the fake scarecrow Santa then kills someone right at the start of the movie.
Yeah.
So I don't really, if it was like warding off the killer Santa... Okay, that's fine. That makes sense. But then why did they get up and walk around
and kill?
Right.
Also,
right.
But they don't kill. I don't.
Yeah.
It makes my brain hurt.
It created a world and then didn't play by its world's rules.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think that is the real issue.
You just want a bunch of creepy Santas wandering around town. I'm all for it.
Which is fine. We encourage that.
Yeah.
If anything, we want more creepy Santas walking around.
We are in favor of creepy Santas lurking about.
And it's interesting that like the creepy Santa is what was the inspiration for the film. Because I tried to look up, what was the purpose of this? What was the meaning? So on and so forth. And the director said, quote, "The idea for this plot came from consumerism and the internet. My idea for the film became the perfect analogy for us wanting more, needing to be more, and still living in a disposable world in which we all preach global warming and activism. I thought about how much wastage one creates." Yeah. Even if we declare it in a celebration, the horror started to become clear that our ignorance to these traditions is the true villain.
None of that is in the movie.
Further confused me after reading that, because I saw none of these.
No, there is no comment about consumerism in
that
movie.
That is a total load of shit.
What is he talking about?
Yep.
Okay,
two YouTubers, I can't tell if they're just filming stuff to upload later or they're going live for 5 minutes a few times a day. Like, it's a little unclear exactly.
Yeah.
What they're doing.
Well, they can't be live streaming given how many problems they have with getting a phone signal.
Yeah.
So they must be recording for later.
She locks her phone in the car.
Yeah, that was weird.
And their relationship is breaking down. And I found it weird at the end of the movie that she still broke up with him. I mean, I can understand why. That guy sucks, but
he's the worst.
Usually in these kinds of movies, that sort
of
trauma
them together.
Brings them together.
But then again, that said, it did lead to the only, the second funniest thing in the movie, which is his like confessional sad YouTuber video at the end where he's like, "I didn't murder all your children, okay? I was trying
to warn you.
And you didn't do it, and then your children died. That doesn't make me responsible for all your dead children." Okay, I did enjoy that.
It doesn't.
He's
not responsible.
No, he's not responsible.
And that during that comment, he probably made, I would say, the best hair flip that he did of the whole movie.
Yes.
Because he must have done that at least 100 times throughout there. He flips his hair through, and that was his... that was supposed to show fear. It was supposed to show anger. It was supposed to show distrust. It was supposed to show happiness.
It's a signature move.
It really was. I was like, come on, man.
He had his one move.
There's more to it.
Always went to it. It's so true. This is just a weird movie. And it's only 70 minutes long. I can't stress that enough.
The part that I did have a couple of genuine chuckles, and this is going to sound terrible, but I thought it was very funny when the sheep exploded.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I get it. Yeah. No, I agree with that one.
That was good.
And the guy was always in the splash zone. I don't know why I think that's funny. I just do.
No, it is. It is funny.
Oh, yeah, that poor guy. The movie's 75 minutes long. I don't know if you stayed till the end of the credits.
There are bloopers.
Like 5 minutes and outtakes at the end of it.
Yeah. So it's a 75-minute movie, 3 minutes of credits, 5 minutes of bloops. So that's a 67-minute movie.
Yeah. And it felt longer.
It did. It did. It's really it's not drag. Fantastically well paced.
No, no.
Yeah, it's just not a very good movie generally, and it's pretty. No,
I mean, yeah, even the filmmaking, everything was so amateurish. And I'll overlook the first time actors in there. Yeah. I'll look, you know, the young girl. Obviously, give them all, you know, a pass on this. But then there were some where, you know, you're in danger. The one girl is like has serious threat, and she just kind of gingerly walks away through the field. And, you know, there's just these shots that aren't staged well at all, where they're driving away in an escape, and there's a woman who's clearly in the middle of the road on a bright sunny day, and he mows her over, and then looks back like, oh, what did I just do? You know, I mean, it was really just that none of it was done well.
No.
And I still don't know what the fuck a stuffing is. I still don't know what that is.
Well, no, I think that's just a scarecrow full of stuffing to make it look more.
No, I mean, but I don't know what was the curse? How did
yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Well, because they come across that hanging tree and it's like, oh, that's weird. Okay, let's keep going. It's like, I think you might want to stop. Like, at least film it for your channel. Like, how are you so bad at this?
Yeah.
Investigate. Come on.
Like, the curse is written on the tree.
And then what was up with that little girl's God voice? Like, she, for like 3 minutes, weird. They stop and she has, like, this inner monologue where she talks to, quote unquote, God. And then she gets a guttural voice. And, you know, like,
it's such a weird choice.
It really was.
I don't know. Although, kudos for her doing her own stunt falling down that big pile of hay.
Well, that's true.
That was nice.
She did do a nice little tumble at the end there. I give her that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Also, I think hers is the bloodiest death in the entire movie. It's like they really went all out killing that little girl.
Yeah, it's like they keep close up after close up on the stabbing knife.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
She's coughing up blood and it's all over her face. It's like no one else in this movie had
that kind of death.
That much of a violent death.
Yes.
I know. Yes, not really even the woman who ends up splattered all over a car. Yeah, weird thing to prioritize, but it was bloody in a way we were entertained by. So there you
also
go.
Also weird going camping with a wheelie backpack. Nobody does that.
Yeah. Who does that?
How are you supposed to move it over grass, even? Yeah. Let alone
she's carrying
a hill
it like
or
a backpack. I hate backpacks on wheels. Yeah. Like, it's either a backpack or it's not. Yeah. You can't
it's
have
luggage.
Or it's a backpack or it's luggage, the
it's
end.
Luggage. Yeah.
Yeah. And then clearly the only thing inside of that backpack is a tent.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he's carrying around in his backpack. Probably nothing.
Yeah.
And it just, like, I don't know. It just, it's
conditioner.
Not hard to, like, fake going camp. Yeah.
So, like, camping. Especially when, like, you're making a movie, so you're going to have bags and boxes full of equipment. You're making a movie. Just pretend some of that, those boxes or bags or whatever.
Extra batteries, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just, yeah.
Yeah, they did not think a lot of this through. But, again, funny ending.
Oh,
kind of a funny ending when all of the children of Adelaide get murdered by Killer Santas.
Right. Because they had if you take down your tree, then I guess he won't come. I don't get it.
I don't understand the logic of it either.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. What if you get a fake tree? If this is about, like, environmentalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you be, it'd be okay if you had a fake tree? Is it going
to? No, because making a fake tree causes more pollution than cutting down 100 real trees.
Oh my God.
Sorry. I shouldn't have.
You've already given it much more thought than,
they did. I know. And which is what I always do. So sorry. All right. Let's move on to our second movie of the evening.
Okay. Our second
Mercy
movie tonight.
Christmas?
Yes.
That's a good title.
Weird. I am so weird. I don't know. I don't think the title is appropriate for the film. Anyway, here we go. Michael Brisket is invited to Christmas dinner at a new friend's house, where it turns out they have a weird family custom. And I don't know, should we recommend people to see this movie? Because it's actually like, it grew on me.
It did. Me too.
I love this movie. I love it.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
This is so like, well shot. Before we start
talking about it, let's just say we're going to have to spoil it when we talk about it. So let's just say right up the front, watch this movie. Like, it's only 80 minutes long, and it's just a really fun holiday splatter movie that's well written, well acted, well shot. Like, this is just, it's
great,
super low budget.
Great
and
special
it looks
effects,
it.
Both practical and digital.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I honestly had to look up to see. So one guy gets his legs amputated there. And
is he actually a double amputee? Because it
he's not.
He's not.
That's all done with. Shit. Oh my god!
All done with the Forrest Gumpian CGI.
I was going to look that up. So I'm glad you did, because it looks great.
Impressive.
It was really impressive, and the way they just combine those two together, like strung together by Christmas lights.
All right, okay. So officially, stop listening now if you were willing to take our advice and watch this movie. Because
please watch.
Rob just spoiled something amazing that happens in the movie.
Fan freaking tastic.
Oh god, it's good. This is just a good movie, and the only thing that kept it, I assume, from finding bigger. Now, look is just, from a cinematographic standpoint, it does look cheap. Like, it doesn't look like a big budget movie, but all the effects are fantastic. So it's like, why couldn't you just get a little better job going with that camera of yours, guys?
That's true. But in terms of finding an audience, Stuffings is on Prime. I don't know why Mercy Christmas isn't.
That's insane that this isn't easily able to watch.
Will show anything.
Yeah. Like, how is Mercy Christmas not easily watchable on Prime? Yeah. And as you say, a thing that is barely a movie.
Is definitely not one that seems palatable. Like, it's just not a Mercy Christmas. Like you said, title. DM, it's just, A, it's not appropriate. It's not fitting. But B, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, it doesn't tell the audience anything. Like, you hear the term Mercy Christmas, and nothing about that title makes you
think. It sounds like all Hallmark Christian movie or something.
It does,
yeah.
But it's easy enough to, like, if you were to sell the movie to Prime, you can change the title. It's not hard to do. Nobody in the movie says it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like you got to worry about that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And it deals with cannibalism. There's tons that you could do with the, in fact, this would be better as stuffings.
Yeah, call this stuffings. Call it Cannibal Christmas. Like, just do something to make it.
If you call it Cannibal Christmas.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. How long do we really have to wait to find out they're cannibals? We don't have to wait that long, you know. I don't think
the second they had the ribs on there, you're like, and a great establishing shot. Nonetheless, I mean, it was just much to it.
Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, it is, and that's the crazy part about it is they clearly had a talented director and a talented cinematographer. They just literally didn't have a good camera. Or good post effects on the stuff they shot. Really, it's a lighting issue more than anything else.
It would have been so easy. Just like oversaturate that shit in post. Like, it would look great. It would do it would work. It would just do so much for you.
Well, and honestly, at times, other than the great effects, this looks like someone's first cut of a movie, other than the great effects.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like some post work could really improve this.
The writer-director, Ryan Nelson, has been in the business since, Bad Boys 2 back in the day. He's been – and he's a grip. He's been a grip in all these films like Avengers, Smokin' Aces, and on TV too for Ballers and Grown-ish. So he knows – like, this guy knows the business. I mean, he knows what to do with a camera as a grip. So I was surprised to see that was, the one technical kind of flaw to it, because everything else is just superior.
Yeah, it really is. And it's only let down by the presentation.
All of that into the one string lights gag.
Oh, God. I love the string lights gag.
Can we also give a shout out, speaking of kind of inexperienced, Stephen Hubbell plays Brisket, like this kind of mild-mannered, kind of like Milton from
Slubby Office. Milton type.
Yes, yes, who just loves Christmas and is so excited because this sexy office worker invites him to Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
And he ends up becoming like the John McClane of of this movie. Like the unexpected hero who has to go through like, you know, these action sequences to like narrowly escape his own demise. Which is just, and he's
over and
he's
over
brilliant
again.
He's like so, he's never not charming.
Yeah.
Always lovable.
He's so sweet, even when bad, like, even as terrible things are happening to him, it's like, come on, like, it's Christmas. You don't want to do this. And it's like, he's so positive.
He really,
all
like,
of the time.
There's one line that I loved in there. The writing is so good, but one of the lines I loved when Eddie, who was the guy who was strapped to his back, he's like, Mike, what's it like upstairs? And he goes, it's pretty nice. It's done up for the holidays. Yeah. No, I want a travel report. Where are the windows?
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, it means, like, we don't find out a lot about his backstory, but it's like, it means so much to him that he got invited for a family Christmas.
Yeah,
like,
it's pretty sad, actually.
I know. Like, it's so tragic. And he gets exploited by his horrible boss, who turns out is one of the cannibals. I honestly didn't see that coming immediately. I was surprised when his horrible boss turned out to be the worst of the cannibals.
And he's so good at it. Because he's like a comedic version of, like, Patrick Bateman. Like
Totally.
American Psycho. A Psycho. Because he's just... You know, he's like this well-dressed, dapper, handsome, charming, and yet just completely off his rocker.
Oh, yeah. And a total monster about every – like, even before you find out he's a cannibal, he's just this horrible monster to our main character. Like, it's just – like, there's so much good stuff in this movie.
Absolutely.
The dad was great.
Like, you know, we can complain about, like, the direction and all of that stuff, but there is actually – it's a good moment in the film where they've got Michael Brisket upstairs and he's trying to escape and everybody's chattering and the dad looks down. He's like, what's going on here? But it's like, the dad's also very lighthearted about everything.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then you cut and you just see Michael like on the floor trying to get away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like right in front of everybody. I just love the delivery of the dad in that moment because he's mad or angry or surprised. Huh. He's just like,
he is like Ward Cleaver throughout, and he's constantly your mom wants us to go to, your grandma wants us to go to church. And that had social commentary to it of how they were like these devout Christians, but yet didn't think twice about butchering people in their basement, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's so much that went into this movie.
Yeah.
Like so much thought has been put into, again, the themes of this movie, because the thing that Brisket is obsessed with having, you know, this togetherness is not, this family togetherness isn't inherently a good thing. You know, you can have a good Christmas, even if it's just you and your friend at a bar. The kind of person you are in the community you are is what matters, not like the presentation of Christmas that society expects, because they are the perfect example of that. And they're all horrific monsters.
Yeah. And
especially the woman he's, you know, has a crush on.
Yeah. Yeah. This one, too, it clocks in at what? It's under 2.5 hours, I think.
Oh, God,
right.
Yeah. No, under an hour and a half. Yeah, no, it's like... Or,
that's what I meant, under an hour and a half.
Hour and 28 minutes.
Hour and 28, there you go. It's less than an hour and a half.
And yet still, they manage to... Like, it never loses speed, because just when everything settles in, then the brother, the Patrick Bateman's brother, brings home his girlfriend, who was law enforcement somewhere.
She's a dispatcher. Yep.
Yeah,
she's a dispatcher for the LAPD.
So you don't know the way she looks at the camera, or looks, you know, off to the camera, looks and kind of observes everything. You don't know if she's actually there to help or to, you know, what her role is. So there's a whole element of mystery in that second part of it. I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, and then you get that wonder, like, I think my favorite moment in the movie is, like, them doing this whole parody of like this beautiful happy Christmas morning where the whole family's getting ready for church, is about to get ready for church, and going to start the cooking for the Christmas dinner, and she's like, looks happily at her boyfriend, is having a great day, and goes out to her car and is just horrifically beaten to death. It's such a great moment. That's my favorite thing in the movie. And it's just, and her murder goes on and on and on.
It goes on for a while.
Yes, it does.
The thing is, and this is why he's so talented as a director, because everything up to the murder was played as if this is like a romantic comedy and a fun family scene that you're supposed to like, to almost make you forget, oh, no, she's as bad as the rest of the cannibals.
Yep.
It's such a well done scene. Yeah, no, I was so happy with this movie. I had no idea what to expect going in, you know, because it did one of those things I like the least, where a movie starts with, you know, a guy screaming in a basement, and then it's like 2 days earlier. Like,
yeah.
Just
tell me the story, you know, it's fine. You don't have to.
And then you see a bunch of people getting attacked, and it's like, what am I watching?
I'm watching here.
With this. Yeah.
And then, because of the way it's lit and staged, you know, it does have this kind of cheap look to it. And you're like, oh no, what am I going to be in for? And then,
like, it's one so by much one, more clever.
One by one, the cast starts to win you over. And then when it gets dark, it's not afraid to go to some really shady places.
Oh, yeah.
Practical effects are fantastic.
They really are.
Like I said, that digital, I was shocked that it was not a double amputee in that role.
I was convinced.
Well, because he spends so little time in the movie moving around. I thought they had hired a guy who's a double amputee.
Once he gets his legs cut off and he's moving around, I'm like, did we actually see him?
Did we ever actually see him walk previous to this?
I mean, because he's the scalper, so we do see him walking around. But it's like, do we ever get, like, a full shot of this guy?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Like, he could have had prosthetic legs in that scene. But no, it's all done digitally.
It's incredible. That's amazing.
Really,
I will say this, though. One criticism.
Yeah.
Mincemeat does not actually contain meat. A mincemeat pie isn't a meat pie. It's like fruit and stuff.
Oh, okay. I've never had a mincemeat pie, so I just
they're pretty good, but it's not meat. That is a common misconception.
Oh, okay.
Did not.
It just has the word meat in the name.
It does.
In the same way that you call the innards of a pumpkin the meat of a pumpkin.
So yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Okay. Well, that's fascinating, and I learned something. But yeah, like this is just really good, and as you say, it's kind of shocking that this is so much harder to see than something like Stuffings.
Yeah.
Like, this should be easy to watch, because I think it's the kind of thing that anybody could enjoy if they like gore and really dark comedies for Christmas.
So move Stuffings over to Tubi where it belongs, and put Merry Christmas on Prime.
Yeah. Like, this is a surprise gem.
Yeah.
That, like, if had it just looked a little better, I feel like this would have been, like, taken people by storm. But I think a lot of people are going to look at the, like, the production of those first, you know, 5 minutes of the movie and think, oh, this is one of those terrible low-budget movies, and just give up on it. And I really hope people don't, because it is completely worth watching this movie.
It is. And it's up there with Krampus or Better Watch Out, which was...
Oh, yeah.
Better Watch Out was another one that came out around the same time too, and again, very, very dark, not afraid to show to skimp on the gore, but yet still had a cheery kind of comedy-esque glow to it.
We had a very different take on Better Watch Out.
We're not gonna
criticize you for liking it. Let's just say that if you want to hear our thoughts on Better Watch Out, there's a whole episode for that.
Okay.
So I'm not gonna get into it now.
How about Gremlins? Like, can I say Gremlins?
Well, of course Gremlins.
Did you shit on Gremlins? Okay.
Yeah. We would never shit on Gremlins.
Never. No, but it's like, I put this up there, and again, if this had the production of a big budget movie, it would be talked about next to a Krampus or a Gremlins. And it's literally just this film's low budget that is keeping it from getting the kind of attention it deserves. So hopefully we can help change that and convince people to watch this movie.
Definitely.
It's really good. And if this guy wants to, I mean, because it's based on a short film, so he made a short film version of this, like, 10 years earlier, and then he made the movie, and, like, if he wants to try something else, I'll be interested to see what he has next.
Absolutely.
Now, sometimes people only have one story in them, but, you know, like, there are people who are, like, work in the movie industry, and they have one story to tell, and it takes them 20 years to tell it, then it's fantastic. Like, this, or, what's the movie I'm thinking of? Detention?
Oh, great movie.
Yeah, where it's like a guy who did special effects for 15 years, and then he just has one movie in him, but that movie is fantastic. But the difference is, Detention, he had a real budget to play with in a way that this guy didn't. Yeah. And it's like, that's the one thing. Like, literally, the only thing I'm complaining about here is that the budget held him back.
Yeah.
That's it.
That but is this it. Is how you this is how you stretch out a short to a long feature. I mean,
absolutely.
You give us engaging characters. You allow them time to kind of breathe and marinate, as it were, and add some additional plot line. I don't even know if the girlfriend was part of the original. I would assume for a short, probably not.
Maybe not. Yeah, you're right.
You know, but there was enough going on throughout its runtime to keep you glued to it to find out what was going to happen.
Well, one of the things that made me why I responded so much to the girlfriend part of the story is it's actually like thinking through the logistics of this cannibal family and how this would realistically work.
Yep.
Like, you've got to bring, like, because we actually last year, in one of our, last year or 2 years ago, I don't remember which one it was, we were watching this compilation of horror Christmas shorts, and one of them was about a woman trying to bring her boyfriend to get in on the whole being a cannibal.
Cannibal Christmas.
Cannibal Christmas thing, yeah.
Right.
Like, join the cannibal Christmas family. And that was so bad compared to this.
Yeah.
And this
also,
this
they got
done
a high
so well.
Before they went over to Christmas. It was like, a lot of story problems there.
It really was.
But in this movie, like, so, like, Bert, whatever that guy's name is, that brother, he brings home his girlfriend. And then the other brother, the asshole
Patrick A-type brother.
Right. Alpha male.
He refuses to trust this woman, believes that she's going to destroy the family, and like fundamentally doesn't understand that this is the only way that their family traditions can continue.
Yeah.
And even like the dad tries to sit him down and explain that to him. And he just like, he can't, he simply cannot process this.
No,
he's incapable of doing so.
Yeah. I'll say it again. It's just a really good movie. Like, they thought through every character.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Every character has their own stuff going on, and the conflicts between them come from completely organic places, and it's all well acted.
Yeah.
Like, this is such
I really do hope that this gets the
attention.
Some attention somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Especially when there are movies out there like Stuffings. All right. We're going to stop picking
really
on
stuffings.
We should probably stop talking about stuffings now. It
Please.
Doesn't deserve the attention.
No.
All right. So before we go, though, do we have any narcissism to watch?
Nothing.
Nope.
Okay. Well, that's disappointing. my new game, Hoguru Presents the House with Too Many Zombies in It, comes out on Tuesday, December 7th, just in time for the 80th anniversary of Pearl Harbor.
Oh, great.
I don't know if you wanted to celebrate that with a new top-down shooter about killing zombies in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. But if you did, boy, do I have the game for you.
I couldn't think of a better way to commemorate the date.
Well, I'm glad we agree on that front. But anyway... so yes, absolutely. Check out that game. We'll put a link to it on the, it's available on Steam, so you can just find it. We'll put a link to it in the show notes as well, just so you know, you can find your copy there and prepare to have a grand old zombie time.
Nice.
All right. So is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can stream all the episodes there. You can leave us a comment and tell us about your favorite terrible Christmas tradition. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you're listening on an app, rate, review, subscribe.
All right. I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
And I've been a scarecrow in a field.
Aww.
Inanimate.
Joyeux Noël.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.
Bye.